Kalin was frowning. "I'm still not sure I understand." Richard gripped her shoulders. What if the book that was destroyed, Mountain's Twin, is a journey book? The twin to Joseph Anders' journey book. Chapter 33. Kalin was speechless. Richard squeezed her shoulders. What if the other, Joseph Anders' half of that pair, still exists? She wet her lips. It's possible they might keep something like that in Andereth. They must. They revere him. After all, they named their land in his honor. It seems only logical that, if it still existed, they would keep such a book. It's possible. But that isn't always the way, Richard. What do you mean? Sometimes a person isn't appreciated in his own time. Sometimes they aren't recognized as important until much later. And sometimes, then, only to promote the contemporary causes of those currently in power. Evidence of a person's true thoughts can be an inconvenience in such cases, and sometimes is destroyed. Even if that isn't the case, and they did respect his thinking, the land changed its name to Andereth since Zed left the Midlands. Sometimes people are revered because not enough remains of their philosophy for people to find objectionable, and so the person can become valuable as a symbol. Most likely nothing of Joseph Anders remains. Taken aback by the logic of her words, Richard rubbed his chin as he considered. The other unknown, he said finally, is that words written in journey books can be wiped away to make room for new communications. Even if everything I'm thinking is true, and he wrote back to the keep with a solution to the chimes, the book still exists, and it's actually in Andereth, it still might do us no good, because that passage could easily have been wiped clean to make room for a future message. But, he added, it's the only solid possibility we have. No, it isn't, Kalin insisted. Another choice, and the one with more weight of credibility on its side, is what we must do back at the Wizard's Keep. Richard felt himself drawn inexorably toward Joseph Anders' legacy. If he had any proof that his attraction to it wasn't simply his imagination, he would have been convinced. Kalin, I know. His voice trailed off. The hairs at the back of his neck began rising, prickling his neck like needles of ice. His golden cloak lifted lethargically in the lazy breeze. A slow wave billowing through it cracked like a whip when it reached the corner. The skin on his arms danced with goose flesh. Richard felt the gossamer fingers of wickedness slipping up his spine. What's the matter? Kalin asked, consternation chilling her expression. Without answering, gripped by dread, he turned and scanned the grassland. Emptiness stared back. Verdant waves rippled before him, painted with bold strokes of sunlight. In the distance, knots of dark clouds at the horizon boiled from within the flickering light. Even though he couldn't hear the thunder, every now and again he could feel the drumbeat underfoot. Where's Dushalu? Kara, standing a few paces away as she kept an eye on the idle men, pointed. I saw her off that way a few minutes ago. Richard searched but didn't see her. Doing what? She was crying. Then I think she looked like she might have been going to sit down for a rest or maybe to pray. That was what Richard had seen, too. He called out Dushalu's name over the grasslands. In the distance, a meadowlark's crystalline song warbled across the vast silence of the plains. He cupped his hands beside his mouth and called again. The blade masters, when there was no answer the second time, sprang to action, fanning out into the grass to search. Richard trotted off in the direction Kara had pointed, the direction he too remembered last seeing her. Kalin and Kara were right on his heels as he picked up speed, cutting through the tall grass and splashing through puddles. The blade masters and hunters searched as they ran, and with no reply as all called Dushalu's name, their search became frantic. The grass, a singular, undulating, sentient thing alive with mocking contempt, teased them with bowing nods to draw the eye first here and then there, hinting but never divulging where it hit her. Out of the sight of his vision, Richard caught sight of a dark shape, distinct from the mellow green of new grass, rising and falling above the washed-out tan of the lifeless stalks beneath the waves. He cut to the right, muddling leadenly through a spongy area where the mat of grass, as if it floated on a sea of mud, kept giving way beneath his feet. The ground firmed. He spotted the out-of-place dark shape and altered his course slightly as he splashed through an expanse of standing water. Richard came suddenly upon her. Dushalu reposed in the grass, looking like she might be sleeping, her dress smoothed down to the backs of her knees, her legs below at a pasty white. She was face down in water only inches deep. Racing through the wet grass, Richard dove over her to avoid falling on her. He snatched the shoulders of her dress and yanked her back, rolling her onto her back on the grass beside him. The front of her sodden dress plastered itself across her pronounced pregnancy. Strings of wet hair lay across her bloodless face. Du Chaillu stared up with dark, dead eyes. She had that same odd, lingering look of lust in her eyes Junie had had when Richard found him drowned in a shallow stream. Richard shook her cold, limp body.
No. Du Chaillu, no! I saw you alive only a minute ago. You can't be dead. Du Chaillu!
Her mouth slack, her arms splayed clumsily. She exhibited no response. There was no response to show. She was gone. When Caitlin put a comforting hand on his shoulder, he fell back with an angry cry of anguish.
She was just alive, Kara said. I just saw her alive only moments ago.
Richard buried his face in his hands.
I know. Dear spirits, I know. If only I'd realized what was happening.
Kara pulled his hands away from his face.
Lord Rawl, her spirit might still be with her body.
Blade masters and mud people hunters were tumbling to their knees all around. Richard shook his head.
I'm sorry, Kara, but she's gone.
Stark, taunting memories of her alive cavorted unbidden through his mind.
Lord Rawl!
She's not breathing, Kara. He reached to close her eyes.
She's dead.
Kara gave his wrist a fierce tug.
Did Denna not teach you? A Mord Sith would teach her captive to share the breath of life.
Richard grimaced away from Kara's blue eyes. It was a gruesome rite, the sharing of pain in that way. The memory flooded through him with horror to match that of Du Chaillu's death. A Mord Sith shared her victim's breath while he was on the cusp of death. It was a sacred thing to a Mord Sith to share his pain, share his breath of life as he slipped to the brink of death, as if to view with lust the forbidden sight of what lie beyond in the next world. Sharing, when the time came to kill him, his very death, by experiencing his final breath of life. Before Richard killed his mistress in order to escape, she had asked him to share her last breath of life. Richard had honored her last wish, and had taken into himself Denna's last breath as she died.
Kara, I don't know what that has to do with. Give it back to her!
Richard could only stare.
What?
Kara growled and stiff-armed him out of her way. She dropped down beside the body and put her mouth over Du Chaillu's. Richard was horrified by what Kara was doing. He thought he had managed to give the Mord Sith more respect for life than this. The sight staggered him with the obscene memory, seeing it new again before his eyes, seeing her crave that corrupt intimacy again. It stunned him to see Kara covet something so ghastly from her past. It angered him she had not risen above her brutal training and way of life as he had hoped for her. Pinching Du Chaillu's nose, Kara blew a breath into the dead woman. Richard reached for Kara's broad shoulders to rip her away from Du Chaillu. It enraged him to see it, to see a Mord Sith do such a thing to the freshly dead. He paused, his hands floating there above her. Something in Kara's urgency and her demeanor told him all was not what it had first seemed. With one hand under Du Chaillu's neck and the other holding her nose closed, Kara blew another breath. Du Chaillu's chest rose with it and then slowly sank again as Kara took another for herself. A blade master, his face red with rage, reached for Kara. Since Richard seemed to have changed his mind, Richard caught the man's wrist. He met Jian's questioning eyes and simply shook his head. Reluctantly, Jian withdrew.
Richard, Caitlin whispered, what in the world is she doing? Why would she do such a grotesque thing? Is it some kind of Daharan ritual for the dead?
Kara took a deep breath and blew it into Du Chaillu.
I don't know, Richard whispered back, but it's not what I thought.
Caitlin looked even more bewildered.
And what could you have possibly thought?
Unwilling to put such a thing into words, he could only stare into her green eyes. He could hear Kara blow another deep breath into Du Chaillu's lifeless corpse. He turned away, unable to watch. He couldn't understand what good Kara thought she was doing, but he couldn't sit there while others watched. He tried to convince himself that, as Caitlin had suggested, perhaps it was some Daharan ritual to the departing spirit. Richard staggered to his feet. Caitlin caught his hand. He heard a wet, sputtering cough. Richard swung back around and saw Kara hauling Du Chaillu over onto her side. Du Chaillu gasped with a choking breath. Kara slapped the woman's back as if she were burping a baby, but with more force. Du Chaillu coughed and gasped and panted. Then she threw up. Richard fell to his knees and held her thick mass of dark hair out of her way as she vomited.
Kara, what did you do?
Richard was dumbfounded to see a dead woman come back to life.
How did you do that?
Kara thumped Du Chaillu's back, making her cough out more water.
Did Denna not teach you to share the breath of life?
She sounded annoyed.
Yes, but it wasn't.
Du Chaillu clutched at Richard's arm as she panted and spat up more water.
Richard stroked her hair back in a comforting manner to let her know they were there with her. The squeeze on his arm told him she knew.
Kara, Keelan asked, what have you done? How did you bring her back from death? Was it magic?
Magic, Kara scoffed. No, not magic. Not anything near magic. Her spirit had not yet left her body, that's all. Sometimes, if their spirit has not had time to leave their body, you still have time. But it must be done immediately. If so, you can sometimes give them back the breath of life.
The men gestured wildly as they all jibber-jabbered excitedly to one another. They had just witnessed a marvel that was sure to be the birth of a legend. Their spirit woman had traveled to the world of the dead and returned.
Richard stared slack-jawed at Kara.
You can? You can give dead people back the breath of life?
Keelan whispered encouragement as she picked wet strands of hair from Duchelieu's face. She had to stop and hold back the hair when the woman's coughing was interrupted by another bout of heaving. As grim and sick as Duchelieu looked, she was breathing better.
Keelan took a blanket the men had handed down and wrapped it around Duchelieu's shivering shoulders.
Kara leaned close to Richard, so no one else would hear.
How do you think Denna kept you from death for so long when she tortured you? There was no one better at it than Denna. I am Mordsith. I know what would have been done to you, and I knew Denna. There would have been times she had to do this to keep you from dying when she was not yet finished with you. But it would have been blood, not water.
Richard remembered that too, coughing up frothy blood as if he were drowning in it. Denna was Darkin Rall's favorite because she was the best. It was said she could keep her captive alive and on the cusp of death longer than any other Mordsith. This was part of how she did that.
But I never thought, Kara frowned.
You never thought what? Richard shook his head.
I never thought such a thing was possible, not after the person had died.
After she had just done something noble, he didn't have the heart to tell Kara he had thought she was sating some grisly appetite from her past.
You did a miraculous thing, Kara. I'm proud of you.
Kara scowled.
Lord Rall, stop looking at me like I am a great spirit come to our world. I am Mordsith. Any Mordsith could have done this. We all know how.
She snatched his shirt collar and pulled him closer.
You know of it, too. Denna taught you. I know she did. You could have done this as easily as I.
I don't know, Kara. I've only taken the breath of life. I've never given it. She released his collar.
It is the same thing, just in the other direction.
Duchelieu sprawled herself across Richard's lap. He smoothed her hair with gentle empathy. She clutched at his belt, his shirt, his waist, holding on for dear life as he tried to keep her calm.
My husband, she managed between gasping and coughing. You saved me from the kiss of death.
Keelan was holding one of Duchelieu's hands. Richard took the other and placed it on a leg sheathed in leather.
Kara is the one who saved you, Duchelieu. Kara gave you back the breath of life.
Duchelieu's fingers kneaded at Kara's leather-clad leg, groping their way up until she found Kara's hand.
And the Kaharin's baby. You saved us both. Thank you, Kara.
She gasped another rattling breath.
Richard's child will live because of you. Thank you.
Richard didn't think it the proper time to point out paternity.
It was nothing. Lord Rall would have done it, but I was closer and beat him to it.
Kara briefly squeezed the hand before standing to make way for some of the grateful blade masters to get close to their spirit woman.
Thank you, Kara,
Duchelieu repeated. Kara's mouth twisted with the distaste of people appreciating her for having done something compassionate.
We are all glad your spirit had not yet left you, so you could stay, Duchelieu. Lord Rawl's baby, too.
Chapter 34. Not far off, Duchelieu was being tended to by the blade masters and most of the hunters. The Baka Tau Mana spirit woman had returned from the spirit world, or near to it, and Richard could see she had left behind her warmth. The blankets were insufficient, so Richard had told the men they could make a fire to help warm her. They all stayed together to reduce the chances of any surprises. Two of the mud people cleared grass and dug a shallow pit, while the other hunters made tightly wound grass billets. Twisting wrung out most of the moisture. They coated four of the grass bundles in a resinous pitch they carried with them, and then stacked them in a pyramid. With those burning, they windrowed the rest of the grass billets around the little fire to dry them out. In short order, they had a good fire going and dry grass for firewood. Duchelieu looked like death warmed up a bit. She was still very sick. At least, she was alive. Her breathing was better, if interrupted by coughing.
The Blade Masters were seeing to it that she drank hot tea while the hunters turned mother hens cooked her up some taba porridge. It appeared she would recover and remain in the world of life for the time being. Richard found it miraculous to think a person could come alive again after dying. Had someone told him such a thing instead of him seeing it himself, he doubted he would have believed them. In more ways than one, his beliefs had been skewed and his thinking altered. Richard no longer had any doubts as to what they must do. Kara, arms folded, watched the men as they took care of Duchelieu. Halen, too, was watching with fascination equal to any of the rest of them. Except Kara. She didn't think it was at all out of the ordinary for a dead person to breathe again. What was ordinary for a Mord Sith seemed very different from what others thought ordinary. Richard gently took a hold of Keelan's arm and pulled her closer. "Before, you said no one had gotten past the Domini Dirge in centuries. Did someone once get past them?" Keelan turned her attention to him. "It's unclear and a matter of dispute outside of Andorith, anyway." Ever since it had first been mentioned by Duchelieu, Richard had gotten the feeling Andorith wasn't Kaelin's favorite place.
"How so?"
"It's a story requiring some explanation." Richard pulled 3 pieces of tava bread from his pack and handed one each to Kara and Kaelin. He settled his gaze on Kaelin's face.
"I'm listening."
Kaelin twisted a small chunk off her tava bread, apparently pondering how to begin. "The land, now known as Andorith, was once invaded by people known as the Hakens. The people of Andorith teach that the Hakens used the Domini Dirge against the people who were then living there, those people now called the Anders. When I was young and studied at the keep, the wizards taught me differently. Either way, it was many centuries ago. History has a way of getting muddled by those controlling the teaching of it. For example, I would venture the Imperial Order will teach a very different account of Renwald than we would teach."
"I'd like to hear about Andorith history," he said as she ate the chunk of tava bread she had torn off. "About the history as the wizards taught you."
Kaelin swallowed before she began.
"Well, centuries ago, maybe as long as 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, the Haken people came out of the wilds and invaded Andorith. It's thought they were a remote people whose land possibly became unsuitable for some reason. Such a thing has happened in other places, for example, when a river's course is changed by an earthquake or flood. Sometimes a formerly productive area will become too dry to support farming or animals. Sometimes crops fail and people will migrate. Anyway, according to what I was taught, the Hakens somehow made it past the Domini Dirge. How, no one knows. Many of them were slaughtered, but they somehow finally made it past and conquered the land now known as Andorith. The Anders were a mostly nomadic people, composed of tribes who fought fiercely among themselves. They were uneducated in things like written language, metalworking, construction, and such, and they had little social organization. In short, compared to the Haken invaders, they were a backward people. It wasn't that they weren't smart, just that the Hakens were a people possessed of advanced learning and methods. Haken weapons were also superior. They had cavalry, for example, and they had a better grasp of coordination and tactics on a large scale. They had a clear command structure, whereas the Anders bickered endlessly over who would direct their forces. That was one reason the Hakens, once past the Domini Dirge, were easily able to bring the Anders to heel. Richard handed Kaelin the waterskin. "The Hakens were a people of war and conquest, I take it. They lived by conquest?"
Kaelin wiped water that was dribbling down her chin.
"No, they weren't the type to conquer simply for booty and slaves. They didn't make war for mere predation. They brought with them their knowledge of everything from making leather shoes to working iron. They were illiterate people. They had an understanding of higher mathematics and how to apply it to endeavors such as architecture. Their core skill was farming on a large scale, with plows pulled by oxen and horses, rather than hand-hoed gardens like the Anders kept to supplement their hunting and gathering of things growing wild. The Hakens created irrigation systems and introduced rice in addition to other crops. They knew how to develop and select better strains of crops, such as wheat, to give them the best use of land and weather. They were experts at horse breeding. They knew how to breed better livestock and raised vast herds."
Kaelin handed back the waterskin and ate a bite of tava bread. She gestured with a half-eaten tava.
"As is the way of conquest, the Hakens ruled as victors often do. Haken ways supplanted Ander ways. Peace came to the land, albeit peace enforced by Haken overlords. They were harsh but not brutal. Rather than slaughtering the Anders, as was the custom of many conquering invaders, they enfolded the Anders into Haken society, even if it was at first as cheap labor.
Richard spoke with his mouth full. The Anders, too, benefited from the Haken ways, then?
Yes. Under direction of the Haken overlords, food was plentiful. Both the Haken and the Ander people prospered. The Anders had been a sparse population, always on the brink of vanishing. With abundant food, the population multiplied. When Dushalu fell to a coughing fit, they turned to her. Richard squatted and dug through his pack until he found a cloth packet Nissel had given them. Unrolling it, he found inside some of the leaves Nissel had once given him to calm pain. Helin pointed out the ground herbs supposed to settle the stomach. He tied some into a cloth and handed the bag of ground herbs to Kara.
Tell the men to put this in the tea and let it steep for a bit. It will help her stomach.
Tell Chandelin that Nissel gave it to us. He can explain it to Dushalu's men so they won't worry.
Kara nodded. He put the leaves in her palm.
Tell her that after she drinks the tea, she should chew one of these leaves. It will calm her pain. Later, if she's sick at her stomach again or in pain, she can chew another.
Kara hurried to the task.
Kara would likely not admit it, but Richard knew she would appreciate the satisfaction of giving assistance to someone in need. He couldn't imagine how much greater the satisfaction would be to bring a person back to life.
So, what happened then, with the Hakens and the Anders? Everything went well? The Anders learned from the Haken?
He picked up his tava bread for a bite. Brotherhood and peace?
For the most part. The Hakens brought with them orderly rule, where before the Anders squabbled among themselves, often leading to bloody conflicts. The invading Hakens had actually killed fewer Anders than the Anders themselves regularly killed in their own territorial wars. At least, so said the wizards who taught me. Though I'm not saying it was by any means entirely fair or equitable, the Hakens did have a system of justice. It was more than the simple mob rule of the Anders, or the right of the strongest. Once they had conquered the Anders and shown them their ways, they taught the Anders to read. The Anders would have been a backward people, may have been ignorant, but they were a very clever people. They may not devise things on their own, but they are quick to grasp a better way and make it their own on a whole new scale. In that way, they are brilliant.
Richard waved his rolled-up tava bread.
So, why isn't it called Hakenland or something? I mean, you said the vast majority of people in Andorith are Haken.
That's later. I'm coming to it.
Helin pulled off another chunk of tava.
The way the wizards explained it to me was that the Hakens had a system of justice, which, once they settled in Andorith, and with a spreading prosperity, only became better.
Justice from the invaders?
Civilization does not unfold fully developed, Richard. It's a building process. Part of that process is the mixing of peoples, and that mixing is often via conquest. But it can often bring new and better ways. You can't impulsively judge situations by such simple criteria as invasion and conquest.
But if one people comes in and forces another people,
look at Dahara. Because of conquest, by you, it is coming to be a place of justice, where torture and murder are no longer the way of rule.
Richard wasn't about to argue that point.
I suppose. But it just seems such a shame for a culture to be destroyed by another that invades them. It isn't fair.
She gave him one of her looks, akin to looks Zed sometimes gave him, a look that said she hoped he would see truth rather than repeat by rote a popular but misguided notion. For that reason, he listened carefully as she spoke.
Culture carries no privilege to exist. Cultures do not have value simply because they are. Some cultures, the world is better off without.
She lifted an eyebrow.
I submit for your consideration the Imperial Order.
Richard let out a long breath.
I see what you mean.
He took a swig of water as she ate some more tava. It still seemed somehow wrong to him for a culture with its own history and traditions to be wiped out, but he understood to an extent what she was saying.
So the Ander way of life ceased to be.
You were saying about the Haken system of justice?
Despite what we may now think of how they came to be there, the Hakens were a people who valued fairness. In fact, they considered it essential to an orderly and prosperous society. Thus, over time, subsequent generations of Hakens gave increasing freedoms to the Anders they had conquered, eventually coming to view them as equals. Those subsequent generations came to share sensibilities similar to ours, and also came to feel shame at what their ancestors had done to the Ander people.
Helin gazed out over the plains.
Of course, it's easier to feel shame if those guilty are centuries dead, especially when such discrediting, by default, confers upon yourself a higher moral standard without having to stand the test in the true environment of the time. Anyway, their adherence to their notion of justice turned out to be the beginning of the downfall of the Haken people.
The Anders, because of their conquest, always hated the Hakens, never ceased to harbor a hunger for revenge. One of the hunters, who had been cooking up porridge, brought over a warm piece of tava bread, cupped in each hand and heaped with thick, steaming porridge. Helen and Richard each gratefully took the hot food as she thanked him in his language. "So, how could a Haken system of justice," Richard said after they each had eaten some of the porridge laced with sweet, dried berries, "result in the Hakens now being virtual slaves because of the Anders' sense of justice? That just doesn't seem possible." He saw that Du Chaillu, wrapped in blankets beside the fire, wasn't interested in porridge. Kara had steeped the tea with the bag of herbs and was hunkered beside Du Chaillu, seeing to it that she at least sipped some from a small wooden cup. "A system of justice was not the cause of the Haken downfall, Richard, merely a step along the way, one of the bare bones of history. I'm only telling you the salient points. The results, such shifts in culture and society, take place over time. Because of fair laws, the Anders were able to make advances that in the end resulted in them being able to seize power. Anders are no different than anyone else in their hunger for power. The Hakens were a ruling people. How did it get from there to the other way round?" Richard shook his head. He had a hard time believing it was as the wizards portrayed it. "There is more in the middle." Kalin licked porridge off a finger. "Once the Anders had access to fair laws, it became for them the sharp end of a wedge. Once folded into the society, Anders used their freedom to gain status. At first it was participation in business, the labor trades which became guilds, and membership on small local councils, things like that, one step at a time. Make no mistake, the Anders worked hard, too. Because the laws became fair to all, they were able to gain through their own hard work the same sorts of things the Hakens had. They became successful and respected. Most importantly, though, they became the moneylenders. You see, the Anders, it turned out, had a talent for business. Over time, they became the merchant class instead of simply the working class. Being the merchants enabled families over time to acquire fortunes. They eventually became moneylenders and thus a financial power. A few large and extensive Ander families controlled much of the finances and were, to a large extent, the unseen power behind Haken rule. Hakens grew complacent, while the Anders remained focused. Anders also became teachers. Almost from the beginning, the Hakens considered teaching a simple role the Ander people should be allowed to fill, freeing Hakens for more adult matters of rule. The Anders took on all aspects of teaching, not just the teaching itself, incrementally gaining control of the instruction of fit teachers, and therefore of the curriculum. Richard swallowed a mouthful of porridge. "I take it that was, for the Hakens, somehow a mistake." With her half-eaten tava bread plate of porridge, Kalin gestured for emphasis. "Besides reading and math, the children were taught history and culture, ostensibly so they would grow up to understand their place in their land's culture and society. The Hakens wanted all children to learn a better way than war and conquest. They believed the Ander teachings of brutal Haken conquest at the expense of noble Ander people would help their children to grow up to be civilized, with respect for others. Instead, the guilt it put on young minds contributed to the erosion of the cohesive nature of Haken society, and of respect for the authority of Haken rule. And then came a cataclysmic event, a ruinous decade-long drought. It was during this drought that the Anders finally made their move to oust Haken rule. The entire economy was based on the production of crops, wheat mostly. Farms failed, and farmers were unable to deliver export crops for which the merchants had already paid them. Debts were called due as everyone tried to survive the hard times. Many without great financial resources lost their farms. There might have been government controls placed on the economic system to slow the panic, but the ruling Hakens feared to displease the moneylenders who backed them. And then Fairfield mobs in the streets for the starvation. Anders, with their merchant connections, fomented and spread the insurrection from places to frighten mercenaries they could afford to hire, soon held the land in an iron grip. Richard had stopped eating. He could hardly believe what he was hearing. He stared transfixed as Kalin swept her hand expansively in telling of the downfall of reason. "Anders changed the order of everything, making black white and white black. They declared no Haken could fairly judge an Ander because of the ancient Haken traditions of injustice to Anders. Conversely, Anders asserted, because they had for so long been subjugated by their wicked Haken overlords, that they understood the nature of inequity, and so would be the only ones qualified to rule in matters of justice. Woeful tales of Haken cruelty
were the currency of social acceptance, frightened Hakens in an attempt to prove the horrific charges untrue and avoid being singled out by the well-armed troops, willingly submitted to Ander authority and those merciless mercenaries. The Anders, so long out of power, were ruthless in pressing their advantage. Haken people were forbidden to hold positions of power. Eventually, supposedly because the Haken overlords required Anders to address those overlords by surname, even the right to have a surname was denied the Hakens, unless they somehow proved themselves worthy and received special permission. "But haven't they intermixed?" Richard asked. "After all that time, didn't the Haken and Ander people intermarry? Didn't they all blend together into one people?" Kaelin shook her head. "From the beginning, the Anders, a tall, dark-haired people, thought wedding the red-headed Hakens was a crime against the Creator. They believed the Creator, in his wisdom, made people distinct and different. They didn't believe people should interbreed like livestock being bred for a new quality, which was what the Hakens had done. I'm not saying it didn't occasionally happen, but to this day, such a thing is rare." Richard rolled up his last bite of tava with porridge. "So, what's it like there now?" He popped the bite in his mouth. "Since only the downtrodden, the Anders, can be virtuous because they were oppressed, only they are allowed to rule. They teach that Haken oppression continues to this day. Even a look from a Haken can be interpreted as a projection of hate. Conversely, Hakens cannot be downtrodden, and thus virtuous, since by nature they are corrupt. It's now against the law for Hakens to learn to read, out of fear they would again seize rule and go on to brutalize and butcher the Ander people, as surely as night always extinguishes day, to put their words to it. Hakens are required to attend classes called Penance Assembly to keep them in line. It's all systematized and codified the way Anders now rule Hakens. Keep in mind, Richard, this history I told you is what was taught me by the wizards. What the Anders teach is quite different. They teach that they were an oppressed people who, by their own higher nature, have, after centuries of domination, once again exerted their cultural superiority. For all I know, their version could even be true." Richard was standing, hands on hips, staring incredulously. "And the council in Adendrill allowed this. They allowed the Anders to enslave the Haken people in such a fashion? The Hakens meekly submit. They believe, as they were taught by Ander teachers, that this is a better way. But how could the Central Council allow such a perversion of justice? You forget, Richard, the Midlands was an alliance of sovereign lands. The Confessors helped see to it that rule in the Midlands was, to a certain extent, fair. We did not tolerate murder of political opponents, things like that, but if a people like the Hakens willingly went along with the way their land worked, the Council had little say. Brutal rule was opposed, bizarre rule was not." Richard threw up his hands. "But the Hakens only go along because they are taught this nonsense. They don't know how ridiculous it is. It is the equivalent of the abuse of an ignorant people. Abuse, maybe to you, Richard. They see it differently. They see it as a way to peace in their land. That is their right. The fact that they were deliberately taught in a way to make them ignorant is proof of the abuse." She tilted her head toward him. "Aren't you the one who just told me the Hakens had no right to destroy the Ander culture? Now you argue the council should have done no less?" Richard's face reflected frustration. "You were talking about the Council of the Midlands." Kaelin took another drink and then handed him the water skin. "This all happened centuries ago. No one land was strong enough to enforce law on the rest of the Midlands. Together through the council, we simply tried to work together. The confessors interceded when rulers stepped outside the bounds. Had we tried to dictate how each sovereign land was to be ruled, the alliance would have fallen apart and war would have replaced reason and cooperation. I'm not saying it was perfect, Richard, but it allowed most people to live in peace." He sighed. "I suppose. I'm no expert on governing. I guess it served the people of the Midlands for thousands of years." Kaelin picked at her tava bread. "Things like what happened in Andorith are one reason I came to understand and believe in what you are trying to accomplish, Richard. Until you came along, with Dahara behind your word, no one land was strong enough to set down just law for all peoples. Against a foe like Jigang, the Alliance of the Midlands had no chance." Richard couldn't really imagine how it must have been for her, as Mother Confessor, to see what she had worked for her entire life fall apart. Richard's father, Darkin Rall, had set in motion events that had altered the world. Kaelin, at least, had seen the opportunity in the chaos.
Richard rubbed his brow as he considered what to do next. All right. So I now understand a bit about the history of Andereth. I'm sure that if I knew the history of Dahara, I'd find that far more sordid. And yet they now follow me and struggle for justice. Strange as I realize that sounds. The spirits know some people have hung the crimes of Dahara past around my raw neck. From what you've told me of Andereth history, they sound like a people who would never submit to the rule of the Imperial Order. Do you think we can get Andereth to join with us? Helen took a deep breath as she considered it. He had been hoping she would say yes without having to think about it. They are ruled by a sovereign who is also their religious leader. That element of their society harkens back to the religious beliefs of the Anders. The directors of the Office of Cultural Amity hold sway over who will be named sovereign for life. The directors are supposed to be a moral check on the man appointed sovereign, in a way like the first wizard selecting the right person to be seeker. The Andereth people believe that once anointed by the directors, the man named sovereign transcends mere matters of the flesh and is in touch with the Creator himself. Some fervently believe he speaks in this world for the Creator. Some view him with the reverence they would reserve for the Creator himself. So, he's the one who will need to be convinced to join us. In part. But the sovereign doesn't really rule in the day-to-day sense. He's more a figurehead, loved by the people for what he represents. Nowadays, Anders make up less than maybe 15 or 20% of the population, but the Hakens feel much the same way about their sovereign. He has the power to order the rest of the government to a course, but more often he simply approves the one they select. For the large part, the ruling of Andereth is done by the Minister of Culture. The minister sets the agenda for the land. That would be a man named Bertrand Chanbur. The Minister of Culture's office just outside Fairfield is the governing body that ultimately would make the decision. The representatives I met with in Adendrill will report our words to Minister Chanbur. No matter the dim history, the present-day fact is that Andereth is a power to be reckoned with. If the ancient Anders were a primitive people, they are no longer. They are wealthy merchants who control vast trade and wealth. They govern with equal skill. They have a secure grip on their power and their land. Richard scanned the empty grasslands. Ever since the chime had come to kill Du Chaillu, and he had felt the hairs at the back of his neck stand on end, he kept checking for the feeling, hoping that, if it came again, he would be aware of the sensation sooner and be able to warn everyone in time. He glanced over to see Kara feeding Du Chaillu porridge. She needed to be back with her people, not carrying her unborn child all over the countryside. The Anders are not fat, soft, lazy merchants either, Kaelin went on. Except for the army, where a semblance of equality exists, only Anders are allowed to carry weapons, and they tend to be good with them. The Anders, despite what you may think of them, are no fools, and neither are they to be easily won over. Richard again gazed out over the grasslands as he made plans in his head. In Ebenicia, in Renwald, he said, Jagang has shown what he does to people who refuse to join him. If Andereth doesn't join us, they will again fall to a foreign invasion. This time, though, the invaders will have no sense of justice. Chapter 35 Richard, considering everything Kaelin had told him, and what the chimes had in their own brutal way told him, stood staring off toward Adendrill. Learning some of the history of Andereth only made him feel more sure of his decision. I knew we had to be going the wrong way, he said at last. Kaelin frowned out over the empty plains to the northeast, where he was looking. What do you mean? Zed used to tell me that if the road is easy, you're likely going the wrong way. Richard, we've been all through that, Kaelin said with weary insistence as she pushed her hair back off her face. We need to get to Adendrill, now more than ever. You must see that. The Mother Confessor is right, Kara said, returning from Du Chaillu, now that the woman was resting. Richard noticed that Kara's knuckles were white around her ajeel. These chimes must be banished. We must help Zed set magic right again. Oh, really? You don't know, Kara, how pleased I am to hear that you are now such a devotee of magic. Richard looked around, checking for their gear. I have to go to Andereth. Richard, we very well could be leaving inactive in Adendrill, a spell that would be the solution to the chimes. I'm the seeker, remember. Richard was thankful for Kaelin's counsel, and he highly valued it. But now that he had heard what she had to say, analyzed the options, and made his decision, his patience was at an end. It was time to act. Let me do my job. Richard, this is... You once swore an oath before Zed, pledged your life in the defense of the Seeker. You thought it that important. I'm not asking for your life, only your understanding that I'm doing as I must. Keelan took a breath, trying to be tolerant and calm with him when he was hardly hearing her.
Zed urged us to do this for him so he would be able to counter the ebbing of magic.
She tugged his sleeve to get his attention. We can't all go rushing off to Andereth. You're right. Keelan frowned suspiciously. Good. We're not all going to Andereth. Richard found their blanket and snatched it up. As you said, Adendril is important, too. Keelan seized the front of his shirt and hauled him around to face her. Oh, no, you don't. She shook her finger in his face. Oh, no, you don't, Richard. We're married. We've been through too much. We're not going to separate now. Not now. And certainly not just because I'm angry with you for forgetting to tell Zed about your first wife. I'll not have it, Richard. You hear me? Keelan, this has nothing to do. Her green eyes afire, she shook him by his shirt. I'll not have it. Not after all it took for us to be together. Richard glanced at Kara, not far away. Only one of us needs to go to Adendril. He took her hand from his shirt, giving it a little squeeze of reassurance before she could say anything more. You and I are going to Andereth. Kaelin's brow twitched. But if we both... She suddenly looked over at Kara. Alarm shifted to the Mordsith. Why are you both looking at me like that?